that Evans accepted resulted in a fine of $20,000. His resignation is effective January 17. In area weather this afternoon, rain and snow becoming all snow after 2 p.m. The snow could be heavy at times. The highs near 41, chance of precipitation 100%, with total snow accumulation of 1 to 2 inches possible. Currently in downtown Washington, the temperature 46 degrees under light rain. Next newscast at 2:55. The Inside Out LGBT radio program is next here on WPFW Washington. It's 2 o'clock.
Good day and welcome to Inside Out LGBT Radio Show, where we look at everything from pop culture to politics and anything in between through an LGBT lens. Inside Out comes to you live every Tuesday here on WPFW FM from 2 to 3 p.m. Listeners may also stream us live for our previous shows at WPFWFM.org or on iTunes at WPFW Inside Out. I am Catherine Boxall, a member of the Inside Out Collective and today's producer and host. The Inside Out Collective is a group of DC-based LGBTQ thinkers, allies, and advocates who each bring a unique point of view to the show. This means every Tuesday at this time, you will hear a unique voice creating a space to share different perspectives and points of views representing our diverse community. I am the show's resident life enthusiast and creator of the Be Do Love movement. Be Do Love's purpose is to inspire all to get on their path to living their soulful purpose, and me as an explorer, adventurous writer, lover of the arts, travel, food, and life, and a radio host, I seek to inspire and ignite people to live, breathe, heal, and love life, others, and especially themselves. And so, the District of Columbia is a growing and thriving city that has made great strides to support the LGBTQ community. While we've witnessed incredible change and progress in how the community is supported, there is still much work to be done. Today, I am honored to have with me Sheila Alexander Reed, who is the director of the Mayor's Office of LGBTQ Affairs. We'll be discussing the success stories as well as the areas of concern for the community. Hey, Sheila.
Hello.
Welcome to the show.
Thanks for having me.
Thank you for coming in today. And just going to give you a little, the listeners, she's putting her finger like to say brief.
Brief bio, please.
A brief bio of Sheila. She plays a vital role in ensuring the LGBTQ residents have access to all government resources. Her office focuses on the priorities identified by Mayor Bowser, including housing, employment, and public safety. She is unapologetically out and out lesbian that has an extensive history of leadership in the LGBTQ community and has played a critical part of the community for well over 20 years now. Her work to shed light on issues affecting the voiceless among us cuts across every line that could divide us, which includes gender, gender identity, race, socioeconomic status, education level, and sexual orientation. Sheila has fought for social and political justice issues and diverse sectors, including LGBTQ leaders, unions, business organizations, nonprofits, and with transgender adults and youth. And I must say that Sheila was the creator, or is the creator, and former executive producer of Inside Out LGBT radio show on WPFW.
Yes.
So without her, there would be no me. And the other
that's
members.
Strong language.
Well, you know, I'm saying in the context of
the show. Okay, I'll accept
not
that.
My birth. Or so we thank you and we appreciate you because you know you opened this door for us to have a voice and to be here and do this purposeful way of contributing.
No, I'm honored to be here. I was honored when WPFW asked me to help them put together a show, and I'm really proud of the fact that the show continues today.
Mm-hmm.
I left in 2015,
mm-hmm.
so and started in 2008. So,
yeah.
Kudos to you and the collective.
So, thank you very much, and thank you for being there for us when we call on you. And so, I also wanted to introduce a friend of mine who decided to drop in on the show today. I normally send update or a reminder to let him know that I'm going to be on. And today he was like, oh, I'm going to be able to listen. And then he was like, oh, can I come in? So we like to welcome our ally, Clarence Labor, to the show. People out there know Clarence H.U.
You know.
He's in Howard Bison. We was in the marching band together. He's my KK Psi brother because I'm in Tau Beta Sigma. So we go way back, 34 something. Like that, years. He's like, he's 35. He's like, don't say it. When I was a itty bitty, 17-year-old. So he's my big brother. And so I appreciate you being here. And you can chime in, you know, if you'd like to at sure some point. So, Sheila.
Yes.
You know, before we get into everything, you know, have you been watching the new L Word on Showtime?
I watched half of the first episode.
Half of it,
mm.
Because that beginning scene didn't get you going. And
I didn't see enough women of color, and it's 2020.
Yeah, that, you
so
know.
That annoyed me, and I put it on pause and haven't gone back yet.
Okay, that's understandable. I thought the same thing. I mean, that's how it was before.
Exactly.
I think they try to kind of spread it out, you know, since they have Hubette, and, you know, she's African-American, and then they have the two Latino new characters.
Mm.
So I guess that was their diversity. But Shane's wife is black.
Okay, see, so maybe
she's
there's
hot.
Hope.
So if you had stayed on a little longer, you
I'll give it another shot. I'll give it another shot.
You know, it's what it is. It's, you know, it's...
It seems,
you know,
super sexualized also, which is why I'm, you know, our community is always stereotyped as being hypersexualized, so that annoyed me as well. But again, I had high expectations, and when I saw that, I was like, okay, let me come back to it when I'm in another state of mind.
It's very steamy. Very.
That's
very,
another way of putting it.
I know,
yes.
Right? That's the. I know, right?
So, do you like
you're like sexualized, and I'm like steamy.
Exactly. So, maybe that's the difference between us.
Nah, but I can see what you because every time I was like, "Dang, we got another scene here." But I mean, mm-hmm. It's you know what? It's one of those shows that you don't. I wouldn't have high expectations for because you know how, like you said, it's probably not going to have enough diversity that we want.
Well, when it came out originally, for some reason that didn't strike me as being a bad thing because there were no images of us on the air.
Mm-hmm.
So we were really sort of complacent with whatever we got. But now to bring it back and to have such a strong focus on that, I'm looking for more character development,
mm-hmm.
some depth. And
mm-hmm.
so, again, I didn't give it a really long shot.
Yeah.
So many times I'm disappointed. So many shows come back and they haven't grown
evolved.
And evolved.
Mm-hmm.
And so I was really taken aback. I was excited that it was coming back because there's so few shows that focus on the lesbian community. But again, I didn't really give it a long look, but I will circle back.
You said I watch half of it. That's understandable.
Yes, but I'm not done with it.
Okay. I mean, it's, you know, it's good. And, you know, but Bette's doing a political thing, so, you know.
And I look, and that's a little bit of involvement, but, mm-hmm. So we'll see what happens.
Mm-hmm. She kind of reminded me of a lesbian Kamala Harris.
Mm-hmm. Definitely.
Because, you know, they're both hot, but they got that fire, you know, and that, you know, we're not taking any prisoners type of thing. So
we'll see.
It's about
just
the business.
Because of the work that I do and the diversity of the LGBTQ community in D.C. Mm-hmm. and the mayor's sort of emphasis on making sure everybody has a seat at the table, mm-hmm. I'm hyper aware of the optics of when I don't see enough of us at the table.
Right, right. You're in tune to the backstory.
Exactly.
Exactly.
And my partner's a filmmaker, so she's hypercritical as well.
Exactly.
So.
That's understandable. Well, great.
But yeah, we'll give them a pass for now and circle back.
Give them another minute. I know later on I might come back and be like, all right, enough of this. Like, mm-hmm. you know, I'm over it.
Not so steamy anymore.
I'm over the steamy.
Stereotypical.
So. Tell us about, you know, because I'm sure a lot of people aren't aware of the mayor's office of LGBTQ affairs and that it even exists. And if they do know it exists, they probably don't even know what you all really do. So can you shed some light on what that office is about and what your role is about? You know, how many people are on your team? You know, that kind of
information. Sure, I'd love to talk about it. And you're right. There are multiple community affairs offices in the executive office of the mayor. There's Latino affairs, Asian Pacific Islander affairs, religious affairs, veterans affairs, women and policy initiatives, LGBTQ, and the list goes on and on. Mm-hmm. And the point of these offices is to make sure that these constituencies have a voice. Again, seat at the table, mm-hmm. so the mayor knows their needs and so that these communities get a good sense of the mayor's vision for them. And it works really well because you have to have representation from these groups in order to understand their needs and in order to serve their needs. Mm-hmm. And so what we do is we connect LGBTQ residents with the government services they need. And we advocate for them at the decision-making table. We promote LGBTQ causes and programming and culture in the district. My staff has grown to 3 people.
Okay.
And while that may not sound significant, I like to say we are small but mighty. Mm-hmm. In the past in every previous administration, there are only 2 full-time employees.
Okay.
And originally it started off with 1. Mm-hmm. So I do see some growth there. And our budget covers those 3 full-time staff, events and outreach. And we also have a grant for service providers who serve LGBTQ youth experiencing homelessness or what we call housing unstableness.
Okay.
We also talk with residents and nonprofit leaders. We speak with the press. We read about, we're talking about other cities and programs and best practices. That help the community, and we like to model a lot of best practices. We work with colleagues in Executive Office of the Mayor to address LGBTQ concerns. Mm-hmm. And we do training of 35,000 government employees on LGBTQ cultural competency, mm-hmm. meaning D.C. At anywhere from 8 to 10%, depending on who you talk to, has the highest number of self-identified LGBTQ residents in the country, mm-hmm. this jurisdiction.
Okay.
And so you're going to come across us in D.C. government, and if you're in motor vehicles, we'll be coming in to get our driver's licenses, we'll be at the public library, you'll be picking up our trash, we're everywhere. Mm-hmm. And so we need to make sure that the government is prepared to treat this community right. with respect mm-hmm. and dignity. And that's what one of the many things that we do, and we're really proud of that.
Okay. How does that work? Do you guys have a list of organization companies, or do the companies come to you to ask for your services?
So what I'm referring to is D.C. government.
Okay, the
so
government. Mm-hmm.
We have created a training that you come to DCHR, D.C. Human Resources, employees sign up to come take the class, mm-hmm. or there's also an online version.
Okay.
So we like to say that this is mandatory, and if you can't get there in person, which is also always preferred, then you can take the online version. And we are in the process of updating it as we speak because our community is always evolving. Mm-hmm. And I think that is really sort of a low-hanging fruit way to make sure that people are treated with respect. You can't take this course and sign in and say you didn't know.
Right.
You signed the paper, you attended the course, now you're going to be held accountable.
Exactly.
And so we tell people that when we give them this training and say, this is a safe space. Give us all your questions. You can say things that are maybe inappropriate here, mm-hmm. but we're going to tell you if they're inappropriate. So when you get out there and you're working in D.C. government, you have no excuse.
So it's interactive. It's not they just come in.
Oh, no. It's a conversation. It's a conversation. It's a sometimes we have a match game. We teach people terms, mm-hmm. and we let them break into groups and give them a list of terms and sort of like a little contest to see who can give us a definition of these terms mm-hmm. Before the other team. So we keep it interactive and make it a conversation. And it's always not just a sort of talking down or just sort of like demanding what you do, but it's a conversation. A lot of times people mm-hmm. will ask questions, well, such and such came out to me and things like that. And so it's always a two-way conversation. I think that makes it a lot more palatable, if you will.
Mm-hmm. Definitely. Thank you. That's great. So you mentioned a lot of different things that your organization does. Tell us about a typical day for you.
There is no typical day. There's no typical day. Well, I have certain things that I try to do. You go in and you want to check your email and check your voicemail.
Of course.
But people will be calling us for services.
Mm-hmm.
And while we are not a direct service agency, we direct them to services. For instance, if you called and said that you were discriminated against in some employment and it's based on your sexual orientation or gender identity or gender expression, then we would be talking to you, getting your information, and probably referring you to the appropriate agency, which is the Office of Human Rights.
Mm-hmm.
Or if somebody came in and said that they were homeless and wanted to get help, and particularly around youth, we have a specific housing specialist who's in our office detailed to us from the Department of Human Services. And that is her main focus. So she would help that person maybe get off the street into an emergency shelter, ultimately, hopefully move them into transitional housing, mm-hmm. and then later permanent housing. So we are sort of triage. And
right.
and so when you're in triage, you can't have a typical day.
Mm-hmm.
So
right.
in addition, we go to community events, mm-hmm. we host events, and we meet with other agencies. But there is no typical day.
Mm-hmm. So now you came from other entities such as media, newspapers. I'm not sure if you did politics before this.
Usually sales.
So when you came into this particular office and political structure, you know, I'm sure you might have had your thoughts of how it was going to be. But when you came in the door, what's like that one thing that you learned that you were like, oh, shoot. This is, you know,
surprising. I would say I came in thinking that I was going to reinvent LGBTQ affairs, not having a good sense enough of what it was already,
mm-hmm.
and not having a good sense of how progressive DC government is compared to other jurisdictions.
Okay.
I grew up in Maryland. I went to college at Spelman in Atlanta. And then I came back and worked in D.C. and I worked in the entire region. And I was always in the private sector. So when I came to D.C. government, I'm going to make sure that they treat us with respect and that they know the right pronouns. I want to make sure that these schools know that they cannot have bullying. You know, I had all these things in my mind. And when I got there, I found out there is an LGBT liaison unit in the Metropolitan Police Department,
mm-hmm.
made up of LGBT police officers. I found out there's already bullying policy. There's an LGBT and sexual health program at D.C. Public schools. I found out that this mayor has appointed more LGBTQ cabinet members and second cabinet members than any other mayor in the history of the district. So D.C. was already very LGBTQ friendly and supportive. So I came in ready to knock down walls that were already knocked down.
You're like, wait a minute.
I was pleasantly surprised. I was pleasantly surprised. So my work was to build on that. Mm-hmm. But I didn't have to sort of create it from the ground up, which was actually a relief, because now you can actually do more because you're not
spending time on the ground level.
And you're not starting from you know, the bottom up. We're already most of the way there. But what we needed to do was just sort of amplify the mayor's message, let people know that our office is there to serve them, and let them know that they are welcome to come in any time, and let them know what we do. Because we while we don't provide those direct services, we can help you anything that you need in government, in DC government. And like I said, it could be from you think your trash isn't getting picked up on the right day, whatever it is, just like any of these other offices, we're there for you.
Awesome, awesome. So a little while ago, you mentioned the youth. And so, you know, let's talk about the youth and the seniors in the community. But first, I want to, let's talk about the youth and start there. So there's a statistic that says 40% of youth experiencing homelessness identify as LGBTQ. And I was wondering, is that statistic true for the D.C. area? Do you know of that?
Sure. Well, I think that statistic has come down. It was almost 50% a couple of years ago nationally. Mm-hmm. And D.C. was something like 47%, and now the national is 40%, and D.C. is something like 38%.
Okay.
So we while it is high and
very high,
and I dare say unacceptable, mm-hmm. we are meeting the need of D.C. LGBTQ youth with the housing program that I mentioned. Not only do we have an emergency bed program, a transitional housing program, and permanent housing program, we also have vouchers in my office, not for youth, but for LGBTQ adults, because some of the times we're finding that youth are sort of aging out of the system. Once you're over 24, sometimes you may not have it all together, mm-hmm. and you may still need help. As you can imagine, some of these youth have had a great deal of trauma.
Right. Yes.
If you're put out of your house because of your sexual orientation, gender identity, gender expression, gender nonconforming status, whatever, you may be living on the street. You may be sexually assaulted. You may be doing drugs. You may be doing survival sex work. And so sometimes to just get through the day, you may be doing drugs. And so these things have a lot of cumulative effects, if you will. Mm-hmm. And it's a lot of trauma. And so these are youth that you cannot just give them a 9-to-5 and expect them to thrive and flourish. Mm-hmm. Wraparound services are needed. Mm-hmm. And so we fund service providers who help provide these wraparound services. And it could be housing. It could also, we also provide training for these providers. And some of these are Casa Ruby, Smile, Wanda Alston House. And these are places where youth can go. There are other shelters and services for youth, but these are LGBTQ specific.
Mm-hmm. Gotcha.
And so they can go there and they can be themselves and get the help that they need. And so one of the that's one of the things that my office does. We have a grant program that funds these providers so that they can meet these needs, the very specific and nuanced needs mm-hmm. of LGBTQ youth.
Mm-hmm. And what are those grants? What are those?
There are $75,000 worth of grant funding. It's called the YES Grant,
mm-hmm.
and it's stands for Youth. Where, let me pull it up. Youth Employment and Self Sufficiency Grant,
mm-hmm.
and really it's about capacity building. And as I said, for instance, I'll give you an example. Smile has a grant to provide bikes for the youth in their transitional housing program.
Okay,
for instance. Now you have a house. Now you have youth that need to go to work or they need to go to school. They have to be in one of those things to be in the house. Mm-hmm. So how are they going to get there? Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So, again, a lot of the sort of basic things that you and I may know how to do, some of these youth may not know how to do.
Right.
So they're in a house that, that really helps them sort of become adults, but they still need help. Another time there was a program where we provide lockers at DC Center because some homeless youth may need a locker to put their valuables. So there's a whole lot of little intangibles mm-hmm. that we may take for granted. And I'm really proud of that kind of work that we do.
Yeah, no, that's great because, you know, I'm sure people, you know, first of all, there's a huge homeless issue among youth, period. Right?
Yes.
And then hearing that percentage of what percentage of them are LGBTQ was eye-opening for me and was like, wow. Mm-hmm. And it's not even just here. It's in L.A. It's in, you know, all the big cities where there's a huge percentage of them that are homeless.
It's going down, but it's still alarming. And we're mm-hmm. still making sure that we're addressing it because 38% is still too much, right?
Yeah, 1% is too much. Almost 2 in 5. So.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And you can imagine some of these youth may be running away from bad situations at home. Mm-hmm. Some of them, I've had people tell me, oh, my mom put me out because I wear my pants baggy, and she thought that that meant that I was trying to be a boy, and therefore I must be a lesbian. And I'm not, or my mom put me out, or my dad put me out because they're religious. And there's something that's really heartbreaking about that.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, unconditional love from a parent is something that we all expect. Mm-hmm. And so when you are faced with these kids on a regular basis who don't get that unconditional love, it really affects you.
Mm-hmm.
And so then you have to really make sure that you're on top of those programs because these kids don't have anything but this program, so you better make sure this program is good.
Right, right, and that they're engaged in an area. We had a young transgender male on our show previously who he had spoke of that his parents, you know, put him out, you know, and they were very abusive to him. The good thing about him was that I think one of his classmates, because he was in high school, took him in. His family, their family took him in.
And I was going to say, if he's homeless, please give me his name.
No, actually, it ended up being good for him, but he experienced a lot of trauma. But the good thing was that his high school was affirming, and they, you know, wrapped their arms around him, and someone took him in. And so he's actually at USC now. So
okay. Well, there you go. Success.
Exactly. But, you know, that's not the case for many. So.
And the whole transgender youth, I don't want to say community, but being transgender as an adult is a heavy lift.
Mm-hmm.
So imagine coming to realization that your gender identity doesn't match the gender that the doctor declared at birth.
Mm-hmm.
And you're a child and you're realizing this and you may be trying to suppress that because you don't want to be bullied at school. Mm-hmm. You don't want to be put out of your home. And so that eats away at your soul a little bit every day.
Mm-hmm.
And then when you do try to come out and do transition or do start to transition, and you feel that sort of discrimination, abuse, you know, pick a negative word.
Right.
And so what I say to people when I do the training is, this is life-saving work to many of us who do this work. But it's also life-saving for transitioning people to transition.
Mm-hmm.
And so when they say that they're transgender, just honor that. You don't have to worry why. You don't have to ask questions about who they were. Or you just need to know that this is a serious thing and nobody's doing this as a joke.
Right.
Because they're really sometimes putting their health at risk, their home at risk, because they may lose their home, correct? So when they come out like that, you need to support them
mm-hmm.
because they are already going to be marginalized. Just for being transgender.
Just for being.
And you can add on to that being a person of color or being a person who doesn't have an education or a person who has a lower socioeconomic status, and you understand the intersectionality of the discrimination. And mm-hmm. so I tried to have the people that I teach and train have some empathy for this community,
mm-hmm.
not just sort of educate them, but also make sure that they feel in their heart.
Right. Like, you don't have to know all the who, what, why, and how.
Exactly.
Just have some empathy and feel for
and
them.
That's,
and that's
most
support.
Of the time, that's none of your business.
Right. Unless you have a heartfelt conversation with them to really get to know and learn them.
But these are employees, right? So I'm talking about government employees who may not understand, and they may just be curious.
Mm-hmm.
And I say, if you have a friend, that's who you should be talking to.
Mm-hmm.
But please don't pry into people's private lives. They're just there trying to do their job just like you are.
Absolutely.
And if you're dealing with a youth who is LGBTQ or T,
mm-hmm.
you need to keep that information on a need-to-know basis.
Mm-hmm.
And if they have come out to you, you can put that in that file, but you share that on a need-to-know basis. And if other employees don't need to know that, you make sure that they don't know that.
Absolutely. Absolutely. So, you know, we're talking about transgender, so let's just stay here for a little bit. Tell us about the National Trans Visibility March that occurred, I guess,
September.
In September, so not too long ago. And your office was supportive in helping to organize that. Tell us about that and how that came about.
So, as I just said, the transgender community is particularly marginalized. Most people have accepted lesbians and gays and bisexuals. But I will say this. Within the LGBTQ letters, the Q and the T are, I'm going to say, the most marginalized.
Mm-hmm.
And transgender women of color in particular are at risk, right? And because risk for sexual violence, for being killed, really, around the world. And so it was really empowering for these women to come together. And they've seen the Women's March. They've seen all these other marches, the Save Our Lives March that the kids put together after those Parkland shootings.
Mm-hmm.
And they said, we need to have our own march because we are under attack. They were under attack before the current administration, but it seems to be highlighted now.
Right.
Mm-hmm. So I think that they did an amazing thing with little or no funding. They put together a march down on Freedom Plaza in September. They had a weekend of events. They had a reception. They had a church service. But on Saturday, the 28th, on Freedom Plaza, they had their sort of rally.
Mm-hmm.
And then they marched down 14th Street from Freedom Plaza down towards the Capitol. And I think it was, I don't know if it was the speeches. I was a speaker.
Mm-hmm.
But listening to the speeches and also listening to their sort of rallying cries as they marched was really impactful for me. And I, you know, work with this community every day.
Mm-hmm.
So what I'm hoping is that this march sort of raised the visibility of the needs of this community so that others will hear that and feel that. And I think that they're planning on doing another march
mm-hmm.
In 2020 that builds on that 2019 march, because they are still at risk, because
yeah.
they are still marginalized, because even the rest of the other letters are not always as supportive as they should be.
Mm.
And so I'm
that's
a big...
That's another story.
Yeah, that's another show.
That's another show.
But I am a personal... I'm personally committed to making sure that they get all the resources they need to get the visibility they need. Because just like back in the day when we had to come out in order for people to understand who we were... they need the visibility, because I think with visibility comes understanding.
Mm-hmm.
And with understanding, there's less
confusion,
less
judgment,
discrimination, assaults. And mm-hmm. Sometimes people are treated like they're not human.
Mm-hmm.
And I think when we highlight these things and sort of raise not just the visibility, but raise the vibration about what's going on in the world and how this shouldn't be tolerated, and it will not be tolerated in the District of Columbia. That's sort of like our rallying cry. Mm-hmm. That's sort of the least we can do, and that's sort of where it starts. So when they came to us and said, we want to do a march, will you help us? We helped them meet with MPD, which is Metropolitan Police Department, Fire and Emergency Medical, because all of these people have to play a role in pulling off on a successful march. They had to get permits. They had to get portable bathrooms. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's a huge undertaking. You got to get a sound system out on Freedom Plaza. You need ASL interpreters. So it was a full task. Mm-hmm. And we were on their task force pulling all these government resources together to make sure that this was not just successful, but safe.
Mm-hmm.
And so I'm really proud of that.
Well, awesome. That sounds great. That sounds great. So I'm sure 2020 will be even more hyped.
Yes, I'm excited that they're coming back, and mm-hmm. particularly so soon. Most of those marches wait 2 years between marches, like the Women's March is usually every 2 years and things like that. So to come back right away shows you sort of the need for this visibility, as well as the fact that there's a hunger there for acceptance. Mm-hmm. And I think that, you know, as much as we can do to make sure that they get that, you know, we're committed to that. And the mayor's committed to that. And that makes me proud and honored to work for her.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, thank you. I feel you.
That was strong.
I feel it.
I'm so sorry. I may have gotten carried away.
That's great. No, you know what? That's great, because then it gives people hopefully it'll also engage and excite others that are listening, you know, to really want to hear your thoughts and your opinions, and hopefully, you know, kind of flip the switch.
Thank you.
for them, even just a little bit.
Can I just mention that we've had three black transgender women die or be killed by violence during the 5 years that I've been there with the mayor.
Mm-hmm.
Dee Dee Dodds, Ashanti Carmen, and Zoe Spears.
Mm-hmm.
And I have their funeral programs on my wall, mm-hmm. as a reminder of why we're there.
Yeah.
And I don't want to talk about transgender women or transgender people without mentioning their names, mm-hmm. and bringing them into the room.
Yes.
Because I feel that that's something we don't ever want to forget.
Exactly.
And we want to make sure that we stick a pin in whatever's happening out there that makes people think that this is okay.
Mm-hmm.
So we need to sort of break that cycle of violence. And so you can't break unless you talk about it.
Absolutely. Well, thank you. I feel you. All right. So let's go and let's talk about the seniors now, because, you know, they are important as well.
Yes. I'm knocking on the door.
And so, you know, they experience a lot, which is different from other groups in terms of social isolation, which is one, and we can talk about, you know, they're twice as likely to be single, live alone, four times less likely to have children. And because of these things, it just means they could have smaller networks, you know, to be able to support them and to be there for them. And so, you know, other concerns could be including financial insecurity, caregiven issues, and limited access to aging services. So, and then tack on that, in some cases, seniors are, you know, living longer, you know. So what challenges do you see that the senior community is facing in the District of Columbia, and how is your office supporting this particular group?
So LGBTQ seniors face the same problems other seniors face nationally: isolation, discrimination, ageism. But as you said, they have this, they have other barriers that complicate the issue and exacerbate the issue, because they don't, sometimes they may not have the family support.
Mm-hmm.
So as you age, you know, your children very often take care of you. So you may not have children. You got to remember this whole marriage equality thing is fairly recent.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And so most people who are seniors have, you know, this marriage equality came around when they're already, you know,
right,
knocking at the door.
Mm-hmm.
You know, a lot of millennials may not understand the fact that as much as 10, 15 years ago, being legally married was unheard of.
Mm-hmm.
And so you just sort of cobbled your life together with a partner long term, and you were each other's support network.
Mm-hmm.
So, and as you age, that's all you have. You may be estranged from your family. You don't have kids. And as you go into some assisted living facilities, you may be forced to go back in the closet, because how many facilities do you know that let two men share a room or two women share a room?
Right, right.
Mm-hmm. They're usually separated by gender, and they're not, you know, they're not really accepting for LGBTQ couples. And I think that's maybe something that some laws need to look at. But in the meantime, we are working with the Department of Aging and Community Living. They have an LGBTQ advisory committee that looks at the different ways that the department can help this community. They have recently started their own grant program for LGBTQ service providers that put together meals and train staff at senior centers to be LGBTQ culturally competent.
Mm-hmm.
And they examine these unique challenges that LGBTQ seniors face, because a lot of times people are not even aware of the fact that there is no sort of life support or safety support network for seniors. And you can also tack on the fact that many gay men are still HIV positive.
Mm, mm-hmm.
And so they have their own unique health challenges as well. So it's complicated, and it takes a really sort of nuanced approach to deal with all of these issues. And it starts by, again, visibility, research, data. And then let's, now that we've got the data, let's put some funds towards it to address these needs. And that's where we are. We're funding these needs. And there's also the first time this past year there was a Silver Pride. Now, we're up to 7 prides in D.C.
We had a Silver Pride?
Come on now. I sometimes try to name them, but I know there's a Latinx Pride, there's a Black Pride, there's Capital Pride, Youth Pride, Trans Pride, Asian Pacific Islander Pride, and Silver Pride. That's
okay.
7. There you go.
Mm-hmm.
So the Silver is the Senior Pride, and this is the first year they've had that. And again, it's about visibility and really finding out the needs and then putting the money to the resources to meet those needs.
Okay.
And so this is all sort of just coming, I'm going to say becoming top of mind. It's been a problem for as long as I can remember. But the Obama White House addressed it, and I thought that sort of like started the conversation nationally.
Mm-hmm.
And now jurisdictions like D.C., particularly progressive ones, are putting together a lot of services addressing the specific needs of seniors that are LGBTQ.
Okay, great, great. So, you know, we talked about respect, honor, and so you have a new campaign going on now.
Yes, the Respect Me DC campaign.
Yes, the Respect Me DC campaign. And so I wanted to touch on that a little bit, because, you know, I imagine this is like one of your babies now.
And it's to address, you know, mm-hmm. this rise in hate crimes. And we want to make sure people understand that you don't have to understand, but you do have to respect mm-hmm. each other. And mm-hmm. I think that is the goal here. And we use a lot of gender nonconforming, a lot of a lot of diversity
mm-hmm.
that represents our community. Young, old, white, Black, Asian, queer, trans, everything you can think of to make sure that people understand who we are, mm-hmm. how diverse we are. And we don't care if you don't understand us. What we want to make sure is that you respect us.
Mm-hmm.
Karen can come later.
Yeah, we have a clip. Michael, the Respect DC
Using someone's preferred pronouns is a way of showing respect for them as a human being.
I want someone who's going to be able to love me, honor me, respect me for my opinions, but also will put their body on the line for my liberation.
Black trans women should be at the forefront of this movement, of this community.
We got to address the cultural piece, making sure that people, residents or visitors, that everyone is respected regardless of their gender identity or sexual orientation.
We've got to support each other and call out the hate crime and to support trans and queer folks.
And we have to, as parents, tell our kids or teach our kids that different is not a bad thing.
Mayor Bowser, she doesn't just talk the talk, she walks the walk, and she backs this community.
Awesome. So that's the promo clip for that.
Yes, thank you for playing that.
No,
that was a great... It was a great project to put together, and we plan to show that a lot more in 2020.
Mm-hmm. And what other visible things you're doing in terms of to support this campaign?
Well, we've done a good deal on bus shelters and on the circulator where you can drive around the city and see it. We specifically targeted entertainment areas like the H Street corridor, U Street corridor, MLK over by the Big Chair, and DuPont Circle, because we find that sometimes that's where hate crimes occur, where people are out and drinking alcohol and feel free to
step outside of themselves.
Thank you. Thank you so much for helping me out there. So we put the messages where we think they're gonna be seen, and where we think
be impactful.
Exactly. Where the target audience is, and so that's already happened. So we're now getting ready to roll out a big social media campaign with these same messages, because we had something like 30 people in this photo shoot, and maybe 15, 20 of them also did a video interview. You just heard a little snippet of the video, the audio of the video interview just now. But we also have maybe like a 6 to 10 minute version of the trailer. And so we're going to find different venues and different ways to show the photos and to also show the videos. Okay. But if did you actually get to see it?
The
video.
No.
Mm-mm. Okay, so take a look at it, because
Where can we see that at?
Well, I sent it to you for the clip, but I will also...
Oh, okay.
You can see it.
I just had the trailer part.
No, that's okay. What we'll do is it may be up on our website. And if it's not, we'll make sure it gets up there. We're also thinking about other ways where we can have it sort of spread virally through the community. And I think it wouldn't be a bad idea to show it in some school environments.
Absolutely.
If not necessarily the school itself, but around schools. And so we're still sort of at the table thinking about what the next level it looks like, but we know that we're going to have a robust campaign coming out, and it will be not just in buses, but also on social media. And we want it to be such that you can't miss it. And again, it's just a way of telling people that D.C. has zero tolerance for hate.
So it's hashtag RespectMeDC.
Yes.
So folks, look out for that coming up soon. And so you have other programs and events going on, and I saw you had a District of Pride. I don't know how I missed that.
You missed it 2 years in a row.
I'm like, how am I missing these events? You got to like.
We got to get you on our email list.
Yes, yes. So tell us about the District of Pride and what that was about. And so this year, you're going to be doing it this year? Okay.
That's the goal.
So it'll
That's
be the third
goal.
Annual.
Third annual. So June is Pride Month, not just in D.C., but really globally, or at least in this country. So we usually have to go to a lot of other people's events. But 2 years ago, we decided let's do our own event for June. And as we do with all of our events, they're free of charge. We wanted them to be in an area that was safe and near Metro. So we had this idea to put together D.C.'s best LGBTQ talent and hold it at Lincoln Theater.
Mm-hmm.
And all we had to do was find the talent, find a way to get that venue, and then find a way to promote it. And all the stars aligned, and we had this amazing event. The talent was through the roof. And so we had singers, we had dancers, we had comedians, we had spoken word. We had the first year, I think we had like dancers with hula hoops of a fire, but because of Lincoln Theater, we couldn't have the fire inside. So the hula hoops just lit up. And so that was a very unique. We had drag king, we had drag queens, we had a little bit of everything. Mm-hmm. And
I saw you had Bea Steadwell.
Bea Steadwell was the second year.
Mm-hmm. She's a friend of the show.
Oh my gosh! So she turned it out. The first year we had Boom Scat, we had a church choir, we had a drag king group. And so we really wanted to make sure, again, and we also have a DJ. And we also had Racine from the Ask Racine show.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, we made sure that we touched all the various parts of the community and brought them all together for this great celebration of us, if you will.
Yeah.
And I think D.C. Needs more of that because, well, we're known for being LGBTQ friendly. We don't often take the time to celebrate ourselves outside of being in the Capitol Pride Parade or Capitol Pride Festival. But to have this sort of artistic celebration was a whole nother level. And to have that kind of level of talent and make it free to remove the income barriers mm-hmm. for everybody, it was just really special.
Yeah, great. Thank you.
And this is the second year. When you have a really great initial event, then you have the problem of trying to top it.
Right.
And so the second year we had oh my God, did we use all the good talent?
Mm-hmm.
And we found even more talent. And so this third year, you know, we got to start to call mm-hmm. to get people to reach out to us because we plan to build on it every year. And it really is a way to affirm ourselves.
Mm-hmm.
And I think, you know, the mayor also wanted us to make sure that we were not leaving out millennials in our events.
Mm-hmm.
And so we made this a millennial-centered event. We had millennials curate the talent, do the marketing. They named it District of Pride. So we wanted to say, I'm saying, look, I'm not a millennial.
Mm-hmm.
I used to be an event promoter, but I want you to handle it because you know what to say. I came up with some names. They're like, oh, corny. That's outdated. And the stamp of the logo, they had a say in all of that. And as a result, it was really successful.
It was fresh. And,
and while it was not millennials only, it was a good deal of millennials there surrounded by everybody else. Mm-hmm. And so that was sort of like eye-opening to see if you just step out of the way,
mm-hmm.
let the experts in the millennial world handle it, it'll be a great event.
And it's great, too, because it begins to get them engaged, right?
Exactly.
Not just in their own little world, but you're bringing them into this kind of landscape and showing them the things that they can do in terms of to drive the community and get them involved and early on.
And it was an eye-opener for me. I had gone to a drag king show put on by, I think it's Pretty Ricky,
mm-hmm.
and I wasn't aware of them. And I went into this, I think it was a beer baron over on DuPont Circle, and it was a whole sort of world of LGBTQ young people that I didn't even know this group exists.
Right.
I didn't know this huge community was there. And so just like that, they probably didn't know that we were there.
Mm-hmm.
So it was a great way for them to find out about LGBTQ affairs in the mayor's office
mm-hmm.
and a great way for them to see the mayor support of this community. So we both really got to know one another. And I think that was a win-win.
So thank you. You know, this has been a great conversation. And so just kind of briefly tell the audience how they can get involved and lend their talent, expertise, compassion, empathy, and all of that to the community.
Well, I would say we're on social media. Mm-hmm. DC at DC LGBTQ is our handle on social media, but you can also give us a call. We're old school, 202-442-5143. We answer the phone. And I think we would love people to volunteer with us. Mm-hmm. We're already preparing for 2020 and looking to do we didn't get to talk about the 40 under 40, but that was a great event we started last year where we also, it was a millennial event. We highlighted 40 women that are under 40 years old who are change agents in D.C.
Okay.
And that's coming up again. So we're doing all these things to sort of make sure that we're reaching young and old.
Great.
And so when we talk about these events coming up, we're looking for people to reach out to us, not just to get on the guest list, but to get involved.
Mm-hmm.
We also have a lot of events with the mayor coming up, the High Heel Race, the Capitol Pride Parade. Mm-hmm. And people love to come out and do things actually with her. So if you want to either volunteer at an event or come out and march with the mayor or be with her in the High Heel Race, contact our office. We'd love to have you. My email is sheila.reed2@dc.gov.
Awesome. Thank you so much for joining us today. And, you know, for the audience, you know, while Sheila and her team at the Mayor's Office of LGBTQ Affairs are a driving force for being advocates, you know, the community, and they're doing an amazing job at it, you know, let's face it, they can't be expected to fight the good fight alone. It takes a village with each and every one of us to stand up and stand out and lead with our particular voices and support. And as the person said who was involved in the recording for the Respect Me DC video, he said, I want someone who is going to be able to love me, honor me, and respect me, but not only that, to put their body on the line for our liberation. So hopefully we will all do that and step up and step out. So thank you, Sheila.
Thank you so much.
And thank you, Clarence, for coming in and sitting in with us.
You're
and
welcome.
Please join us again next
week.
Thank
you, Mike, our engineer.
Thank you, Mike.
Woo!
Good afternoon. These are the headlines. I'm Rob Sims. Facing probable expulsion by his colleagues and an ongoing federal investigation, Ward 2 Council Member Jack Evans announced his resignation this afternoon from the D.C. Council. Evans' announcement occurred during a meeting when the council was expected to hear from him regarding violations of the body's code of conduct. Evans wrote in a letter to Council Chairman Phil Mendelson today that I believe Washington, D.C. to be the pride of the nation, and I'm proud of the contributions I've made in helping to create a vibrant city. It's been an honor and a privilege to serve the District of Columbia and the residents of Ward 2. An ad hoc committee comprising every council member but Evans concluded last month that Evans took part in a prolonged and egregious wrongdoing that followed a November report detailing unethical practices. The City of Alexandria, Virginia, reached an agreement with the Northern Virginia Urban League last week to purchase the historic Freedom House Museum for $1.8 million. The building, located at 1315 Duke Street, went up for sale in October. The building, built in 1812, was once part of the headquarters for the largest domestic slave trading firm in the U.S., the Franklin and Armfield Company, which used it as a slave pen from 1828 to 1836. An estimated 1,800 slaves were sent each year to Louisiana and Mississippi from the building. The location was designated a National Historic Landmark in 1978. The Bowie Racetrack is front and center for leaders in the city who are making it clear to state leaders how they'd like to see the property used. The Bowie City Council voted last night to send a letter to the Maryland State Legislature, which convenes tomorrow, asking for the title to Bowie Racetrack in hopes of using the 180 acres to create green space and recreation areas. The letter also supports allowing Bowie State University to use the property for recreational activities. During a community meeting over the weekend, the city's delegation showed support for calls from residents to make sure the property is not overdeveloped. Bowie Mayor Tim Adams said once the letter is sent, he'll be focusing on making sure residents support their plans for the future of the racetrack. The city is also asking the state and Prince George's County to kick in some money to convert the old track into open space. Germany moved 35 soldiers serving in Iraq to neighboring Jordan and Kuwait today, while NATO said it was also shifting some of its troops out of the country amid tensions over the U.S. killing of a top Iranian general in an airstrike in Baghdad last week. The killing of Iranian Revolutionary Guard Commander Qasem Soleimani has drastically raised regional tensions and escalated a crisis between Washington and Tehran. And Spain's socialist leader Pedro Sanchez scraped together a confidence vote today with hard-fought support from smaller parties, allowing him to form a new leftist coalition government, and almost a year of political limbo in the Eurozone's fourth largest economy. Sanchez's cliffhanger victory by just two votes in parliament, the final tally, 166